forecast tonight in the mid-Atlantic states and the Northeast. The CIA thinks Fidel Castro has Parkinson's disease. If the disease first struck the president of Cuba in 1998, as the CIA believes, he could now be entering a phase where the symptoms will be more evident and treatment less effective. More news at usaradio.com. Dennis Martin reporting, USA Radio Network News.
A pop quiz for parents with second grade teacher Mrs. Rich.
Today's quiz will be a multiple choice. Number one, the last time I watched TV was A, last night, B, last week, or C, last month. Number two, the last time I saw a movie was A, last night, B, last week, or C, last month. Number three, the last time I watched pro sports was A, last night, B, last week, or C, last month. And one more question, pass or fail. The last time I visited my child's school was A, last night, B, last week, C, last month, or D, none of the above.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school and know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the Internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The first attempt to invade Iraq, the first division of Iraqi oil fields, we now know occurred in January of 2001. We know this from Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who showed us a map dividing up the Iraqi oil fields. But when the decision was made to go to war in August 2002, there was no mention of oil, or very little mention of it, in fact. There was mention of weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons that could bring a mushroom cloud over an American city. There was talk of chemical, biological weapons. Even some muted mention of democracy, get rid of the Saddam regime, because, among other things, it does torture. Isn't that ironic? But no mention of the oil fields that they divvied up 10 days into the Bush administration. And when the war came, and when the war was protested by protesters, they had signs, and the signs would say things like, no blood for oil. And people scoffed and laughed at those signs, saying, well, that's ridiculous. Obviously, this is not about blood for oil. But now that we're there, now that we're in Iraq, now that the country is, well, not very well under United States occupation, the question comes back to ask, was it all about oil? After all, we didn't find the weapons of mass destruction. The democracy that was supposed to be in Iraq is still seems to be leagues away. Was it really all about oil? To help answer that question, I've invited my guest, James Paul. He's the executive director of the Global Policy Forum, which monitors policymaking at the United Nations. Mr. Paul, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, it's very nice to be with you.
Well, from what I understand, you've been focusing on the contracts that are trying to be signed right now between Exxon, British Petroleum, and the Iraqi Parliament. Tell us about that.
Well, this has been a process, actually, that's been going on. I wrote quite a lot about oil as the main reason for the war. And we've known that the big companies were looking to scoop up some of those incredible fields over there. This Iraqi oil is some of the cheapest in the world to produce. There's a lot of it sitting in in fields that have been discovered but not exploited at all. So it's really at a time when oil prices are going up and oil reserves are going down around the world. This is really a bonanza for the companies.
Well, let's go back a little bit in history here. While Saddam Hussein was in power, under the Clinton administration, were oil companies, American and British oil companies, able to sell Iraqi oil?
They were not able to produce Iraqi oil. Iraq, like a number of other countries in the Middle East in particular, nationalized its oil fields in 1972. And there was one company that had been there the whole period of time since the beginning of and since oil was first pumped in 1927. And that company was largely British-owned, but it had there was some American companies involved in it as well, and also a minority French interest, too. So that one company more or less dominated the Iraqi economy.
What's the name of that company?
That was called the Iraq Oil Company.
Okay. Now, of course, back after the Gulf War, the Persian Gulf War of the first Bush president, then there were sanctions, and I assume American companies couldn't get anything out of Iraq, or very much. Is that fair?
The sanctions actually prevented Iraq in the first instance from selling any of its own oil. After the nationalization, there was an Iraqi company called the Iraq National Oil Company, INOC for short, that was producing all the oil. And Iraq, we should remember that Iraq had a very large, very well-educated engineers and oil people that were very well able to produce Iraq's oil, and they didn't need the big companies at all. But when it came to exporting oil, the United Nations embargo was total, and there was they weren't able to export very much during that period.
So this, I assume, this would hurt British and American profits, but at the same time as, I guess, French and Russian and I guess, Arab countries were still sneaking oil out?
Well, those companies made some deals towards the end of that period. There was very little. None of those companies from nowhere really had much control over Iraq's oil. Iraq was selling oil, interestingly enough, all the way up through the end of Saddam Hussein's period. Iraq oil, about 40% of it, was coming to the United States, and a lot of it was going to a big refinery in the West Coast owned by Chevron, which, by the way, that's Condoleezza Rice's company. You know, they had a big tanker called Condoleezza Rice.
Mr. Paul, we have to take a break, but when we come back, I want to discuss how it was that Chevron, Condoleezza Rice's company, was able to avoid the sanctions and whether or not the Iraqi invasion has helped oil company profits. We'll be right back after this.
Hello, I'm Mariano Rivera to tell you about being a volunteer for the USA Freedom Corps. Everyone is capable of doing something. For example, I volunteered to be the radio spokesperson. They say, how does being a volunteer true leader sound?
To find out how you can volunteer in your community, go to usafreedomcorps.gov or call 1-877-USA-CORPS. When you help your neighbors, you help your nation. Make a difference. Volunteer. This public service message brought to you by USA Freedom Corps and the Ad Council.
I've been reading online about a drug-free home treatment program that suggests you can be asthma-free. It's a program designed by an ex-asthmatic who claims she cured her own asthma. It's based on a little-known but astounding clinical trial at a major hospital. What would you give to be free of asthma, asthma symptoms, and sinus and allergy symptoms, to breathe easily, freely, naturally, in a relaxed way? This drug-free method, proven by clinical trials, is guaranteed or you get your money back, and you have 90 days to decide. Get to a computer now and go to HealthStarProducts.com. That's www.HealthStarProducts.com. Read about the asthma program, and if it doesn't do what it says it'll do for you, you get your money back, and you've got 90 days to decide. Go to HealthStarProducts.com.
When you're weary.
In times of trouble, in times of crisis, the American Red Cross is there, providing shelter, a warm meal, a helping hand. Victims of disasters need your help now. Your support for the American Red Cross...
Oh, my attention was divided, Corey, because I was reading the volume thing. How's my voice now?
Yeah, you're perfect.
Okay.
Water,
it was awful.
I will lay me down.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Was the war in Iraq really all about oil? Well, I guess James Paul pretty much says it was. He talks about the fact that the oil companies are making much better profits now than they did in the past because they're getting a bunch of contracts through the Iraqi Congress. James Paul, welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Before the break, you were telling us about Chevron, Condoleezza Rice's oil company, and how it managed to escape some of the sanctions.
Well, actually, what I was referring to was after the sanctions were changed and there was the oil for food program was put in place, Iraq was actually allowed to export oil, and it was mostly Iraqi oil was mostly bought directly by various different middlemen. Based in Russia and all sorts of other places, and the oil eventually was purchased by Chevron, and about 40% of it came to the United States. So it actually wasn't busting the sanctions. It was perfectly legal. But what I think was interesting about the whole thing was that Saddam Hussein's oil was essentially coming to the United States and was being used in the United States in a very It was an oil that was a very special quality. It was very high-quality oil, and Chevron wanted it and bought it and made a very special effort to get it. But what's important about the present circumstance is something entirely different. Chevron was buying that oil at the world market prices.
And they had to go through the middleman to avoid the sanctions, right?
Well, they weren't. Yeah, it was perfectly, as I say, it was pretty much legal what they were doing. But they were buying it at whatever it was, $30 or whatever was the prevailing price. Now, the reason the companies want to have an entirely new type of relationship in Iraq is that if they're able to set up some kind of a deal that allows them to produce Iraqi oil directly.
Sure, cut out the middleman, make higher profits.
Right, exactly. And Iraqi oil is amazing. It can be produced for about $1 a barrel, and it's now selling at 60. Now, can you imagine if a automobile company, say, could sell an automobile for $10,000 and produce it for $500?
It's quite a profit.
That would be pretty special, wouldn't it?
That is quite a profit.
They could find a factory that could produce it at that rate. They'd make a huge tons of profits. Well, that's exactly what the oil companies are trying to do in Iraq. They're trying to get back in control of Iraqi oil so that they can have what economists call is the rent, the very, very big spread between the price of production and the price of sale in the world market.
Well, Mr. Paul, how are they doing right now? I mean, we saw that Exxon, just this last quarter, made almost $10 billion, the largest quarterly earnings by any United States corporation in history.
Ever, right.
Are they now getting cheap Iraqi oil right now?
No, they're not. That's the thing. They're benefiting because the price is so high that they're producing oil. Let's say they're producing oil in the North Sea, and they're producing it for, let's say, $15 or $18 a barrel, and they're able to sell it for $60. Well, there's still a big spread. But if they can get their hands on Iraqi oil at $1 a barrel, wow, that's the real deal of the century. So you'll see if the price stays this high and if they're able to start producing from big super giant fields like the Majnun field in Iraq, they could double their profits. They could be making $20 billion a quarter.
Mr. Paul, why is it so high? I mean, economics will tell you, basic economics, that if someone is making a huge profit, other companies come in to join in, and they unless they're colluding in a monopoly-like fashion, then the price is lower down with competition, and you don't make profits that are 60 times the cost. What's going on here?
Well, the difference here is that you're talking about a natural resource that may, in fact, have only a limited supply.
Right.
And so it's not like you're talking about, you are referring to the sort of classic pure competitive model where other entrepreneurs come in and start making widgets too.
Exactly.
And everyone's making widgets, and pretty soon there's so many widgets on the market that the price drops very far. But in this case, there's only a certain amount of oil, and it's difficult to produce it more than a certain rate. So there's a lot of people out there now, more and more, who think that actually we've passed the peak of world oil production.
So we don't get new companies in the market because they're afraid if they come in, the oil will be gone, I guess.
Well, if they can't get a hold of this stuff, there's just a limited amount of it out there. And you and I simply don't have the resources to go out and start a company that's drilling for oil, because most of the new oil fields around are in very difficult places. They're offshore. They cost billions of dollars to set up rigs and so on. But Iraqi oil, on the other hand, is a totally different situation. It's very cheap to produce, and the Iraqis, if the Iraqi government can get back in the game of producing this oil, and if the political situation can be settled in Iraq, the Iraqi government can do very well producing its own oil. But the companies don't want that to happen.
Well, we're going to get right to that when we come back. The toll-free number is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. When we come back, we're going to talk about future contracts in Iraq. Remember Ahmed Chalabi, the guy that lied to us about intelligence? Apparently, he has a role in profiting from Iraqi oil. We'll get all the explanation right after this.
The most famous television documentary ever produced was Victory at Sea, which was as noted for the swelling musical score by Richard Rodgers as the amazing footage from World War II, gathered from over 13,000 hours of footage from U.S., British, German, and Japanese navies. RetroTelevision.com offers you 26 episodes of Victory at Sea, stunningly reproduced on DVD for just $19.95. The original 26 episodes are presented uncut with every note of Richard Rodgers' original score for just $19.95. To take advantage of this offer, go online to www.retrotelevision.com. That's R-E-T-R-O, RetroTelevision, you got to spell out television.com. Or go to TalkStarRadio.com to get your set of Victory at Sea episodes for just $19.95.
How would you like to work less, spend more time with your family, and make more money than you have ever dreamed of? Now you can. Cindy is a mother of three beautiful children and used to clean houses for a living to make ends meet. She found out about EasyBiz23.com. Her first month full-time, she earned $2,500. Her income increased about $1,000 per month, and now she earns $16,000 a month. Tori says before she started her own business, she worked 10 hours a day in a high-pressure job. She wore out her car commuting back and forth to work. Now she makes over $100,000 a year in her pajamas. Go online to find out more at EasyBiz23.com. Order a free, no-obligation work-from-home training package. Shipping not included. That's www.EasyBiz23.com. Tracy, a restaurant manager who came home to be a full-time mom, made $1,000 her first month and was earning $5,000 a month just 6 months in the business. Get free information now. Log on to EasyBiz23.com. That's EasyBiz, the number 23.com. From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Is the Iraqi invasion all about oil? Well, originally they said weapons of mass destruction. They didn't find those. Then some said it was about democracy and preventing torture. But then, you know, Dick Cheney wants to keep torturing people. So was it really all about oil? Well, our guest today, Mr. James Paul, has made a persuasive argument that prior to the downfall of Saddam's regime, the Iraqi oil wasn't flowing to American companies in the way that it can afterwards. In other words, they had to go through middlemen. They had to avoid the sanctions. They had to pay heavy costs for them and lesser profits. Now, it didn't really affect us. We had lower oil prices during those days. But for the oil companies, it was really hard. And if they could get a new regime in Iraq, one that would actually give them cheap oil, wow, think of those profits flowing to Exxon, to Chevron, Condoleezza Rice's former company, to Halliburton, to all of George Bush's and Dick Cheney's friends in the oil business. And my guest, James Paul, is talking now about contracts being formed right now to help oil companies do well in Iraq. Mr. Paul, welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Nice to be back.
Tell me about these contracts. What do you know? Who's signing what? Where will the profits go?
Well, basically, there were two strategies initially proposed for how the U.S. and U.K. companies could get their hands on Iraqi oil. One strategy that was favored by some of the extreme ideologues in the administration was that Iraq's oil would be privatized completely and all of the oil resources would be turned over for production to international companies. This was considered by the companies themselves to be an extremely bad idea, and the reason was that they realized that nationalism in Iraq and elsewhere in the Middle East would see this as a big grab, and people would be furious about it, and it wouldn't fly politically. So the companies preferred another method, which was basically the same thing, except it had a different sort of clothing. The idea was to have something called a production sharing agreement. And in this way, the formal ownership still resides with the Iraq National Oil Company, but the Iraq National Oil Company agrees to work with the various companies that they sign up, they make these agreements with, so that those companies get to produce directly the oil, and even though it stays formally and legally owned by the Iraq National Oil Company, the companies are able to actually book these reserves into their own corporate reserves.
Mr. Paul, let me ask you this. Why wouldn't a French company, a Russian oil company, other companies that could give a better deal to Iraq than Exxon that would make, you know, less profits, why can't we have competition and then Iraq would just take the best deal?
Well, you have to realize the situation there. This is a country under occupation. Ahmed Shalabi, who you mentioned a little bit earlier, is the head of the Energy Council, which is in charge. He's the darling of the Pentagon, and he's in charge of all this.
Now, Iraq's Energy Council is a government of Iraq council.
That's right. It's the supreme body.
And it just happens, how did Ahmed Shalabi, who, at least according to press accounts, was on the outs with the administration for lying to us, giving us faulty intelligence, how did he manage to get to be head of an energy council in a government that I thought was not supposed to be representing him?
Well, he's there are certain mysteries, but let's just say that people who've had the consistent support from the United States, Shalabi is one. I think that all those rumors about how he was on the outs were really premature. He's in like Flynn. And
apparently so, ahead of the I mean, if it'd be like ahead of a diamond mine in South Africa to be controlling oil fields in Iraq, I mean, that's hundreds of billions of dollars, trillions
right.
of dollars.
Even possibly trillions of dollars. The biggest field is 21 to 25 billion barrels in reserves. It's called the Majnun field. Majnun in Arabic means crazy, and this is crazy lot of oil. And
by
that times $50 a barrel, you get some sort of an idea of what we're talking about.
Now, these contracts have to be approved by the Iraqi parliament, correct?
I think that they will not be approved, no. I think they'll be approved by the oil ministry, probably. There may be some nominal parliamentary oversight of the process. And it's definitely not a done deal in the sense that there is an election coming up. We know that the United States and the UK are going to put a tremendous amount of pressure on to get the kind of people they want in that new government and in the parliament. But 30% of the parliamentarians in this much more highly controlled arrangement of the present parliament asked for an immediate end to the occupation. So I think they're very worried that they're going to get results that they don't want, and that's why they rushed through this thing in the UN.
The toll-free number is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. You can ask James Paul whatever you want. I would bet that those Iraqi politicians that get involved in these oil contracts get their palms greased with black gold. We'll be right back with James Paul right after this.
This is Newsbreak. 5 U.S. Marines were killed in a firefight in western Iraq today. The military said 16 insurgents were also killed in the battle near Iraq's border with Syria. Iraq's Sunni politicians are demanding an independent investigation into allegations that 173 Iraqi prisoners were tortured by Iraqis while in the secret custody of Iraq's Shiite-dominated interior ministry. President Bush's nominee to be the next head of the Federal Reserve has been confirmed by the Senate Banking Committee. Ben Bernanke's nomination now goes to the full Senate. President Bush is now in South Korea on his official week-long visit to Asia. On Wall Street, the Dow lost 12 points to 10,675. The NASDAQ gained a point to 2188, while the S&P 500 closed up 2 at 1231. And there's more news at usaradio.com.
Welcome to the Great and Acid Taste Test. The first group finds Tums chalky and gritty. The second group thinks Rolaids soft chews. They're chewy and delicious.
Hey, why can't we have the Rolaids?
Obviously, and acid users prefer the taste and texture of Rolaids soft chews to Tums EX, and they neutralize 56% more acid.
Give me those.
Get your own.
Rolaids soft chews. Chewy, not chalky. Neutralization based on lab tests. Preference based on consumer tests. Use as directed. Please, don't fight over them.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. A consumer alert was recently reported in a leading consumer testing magazine. It warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. I would never make a bagless vacuum because they're filthy. My 8-pound Orrick XL is hypoallergenic. Try one free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. You'll breathe easier knowing it's an Orrick XL.
I'm Terry Graydon with our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
Now, Trexone is a drug used to treat alcoholics and reverse the effects of narcotic overdoses. Now it's being tested in small doses to ease the pain of irritable bowel syndrome. 76% of the patients in one clinical trial responded well to naltrexone. While it's still too early to tell whether the drug will become a valuable treatment option, this preliminary study is promising and may offer a novel approach to a common problem that's difficult to treat.
Hostility is a recognized risk factor for heart disease in adults. Now researchers have found that adolescents with a hostile attitude are putting themselves at risk of obesity, high blood pressure, and type 2 diabetes. The researchers conclude that intervening early to help kids reduce their level of hostility might help lower the risk of future heart disease. This is Joe Graydon and the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The Iraqi war has come at great cost to Americans. There's been 2,000 American lives lost, tens of thousands of wounded, hundreds of billions of dollars spent of taxpayer money, and let's please not forget the tens of thousands of Iraqi lives lost as well. It's come at a very high cost. But look on the bright side. Oil companies are very happy. They used to have to go through a middleman. They used to have to try to get around the sanctions. They used to have to pay. But now they can have access to what my guest calls a crazy oil field. In other words, it's the Arabic word for crazy. It's such a large oil field. It would make them such great profits. So look at the bright side. Yes, maybe your son died in the war. Maybe your daughter was injured. Maybe, you know, you have to pay more taxes or your children are in massive debt. But at least Exxon is far better off. And what my guest James Paul is describing is the fact that they are trying to put in place in the future contracts to make sure they can profit big time, as Dick Cheney would say, from the Iraqi oil. My guest is James Paul. He's executive director of the Global Policy Forum, which monitors policymaking at the United Nations. Mr. Paul, I assume that Iraqis themselves would, like Ahmed Chalabi or others, would be able to make a lot of money on the side. I think bakshish is the Arabic word for bribes. In other words, they would get their palms greased if they would go with the American companies?
Well, I'm sure that's true. In fact, the present government is notoriously corrupt. Very sadly so. It's the oil sales which are bringing in a revenue, which is a lot of that money is just going down the black hole.
So, in other words, while it's certainly a few Iraqis, presumably Ahmed Chalabi, are making billions of dollars, our oil companies are making billions of dollars, the only people who lose, I guess, would be the Iraqi people and the American people.
Yeah, well, it sure does look like there's been a lot of hoodwinking going on. And meantime, there's been quiet negotiation between the companies and the Iraqis that are in charge of this oil. Mr. Bahar Alum, who's the Iraqi oil minister, who's also one of Shalabi's sidekicks, and he's one of the people that was he's actually been oil minister twice already. Now he was put in there by Bremer and the Pentagon folks, and then he was out for a brief time, and now he's back. So this is a made in America government, and so I would say that when we start talking about the oil companies negotiating with the Iraqi government,
they're negotiating with themselves. In
I
other
think
words,
they're negotiating with themselves. Absolutely.
The toll free number is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. You can also comment on the weblog at RadioInsideScoop.com. We have a comment from Skip. He writes that OIL, O-I-L, was the original acronym for Operation Iraqi Liberation. It was the neocons' original name for this fiasco. Was it a Freudian slip? To me, Skip's question, Mr. Paul, is, okay, so we have oil companies, and they're just trying to make massive profits. I understand it. I don't respect it, but I do understand it. What is their connection with our government? Okay, I understand the Iraqi oil ministers who are greasing their palms. I understand the oil companies. What is the role of our government, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, George Bush, in facilitating this arrangement?
Well, it goes way back before the Bush crowd. I mean, the Bush crowd is the most obviously oily crowd that's probably ever sat in the White House in the executive branch. But if you can remember, there's a famous photograph of FDR sitting on the deck of a U.S. cruiser talking with King Saud of Saudi Arabia in the late years of World War II. I mean, the U.S. government has always been favorable to the oil companies. This is it's just a basic part of the philosophy.
And, of course, the recent energy bill gives a whole bunch more money specifically to the oil companies.
Yeah, but there's all sorts of tax arrangements that
right.
they did years ago, the oil depletion allowance and all these things, these companies hardly pay any taxes at all. I mean, you and I have to pay quite a lot of taxes, but do you suppose that $10 billion of quarterly revenue is going to, I mean, quarterly profits is going to get taxed? Probably hardly at all.
I will tell you this, though. I do know that Congress and the government do get their money back from the oil company. Exxon invests 0.06% of their profits back into politicians' pockets, and yet that $6 million, more than 90% of which goes to Republicans, by the way, certainly is enough to influence a lot of campaigns. So the politicians are getting their money's worth in America as well as they are in the United States. Let me read you another comment from the blog, if I could, Mr. Paul. This is from Bob. Bob writes, if it was all about oil, then ethics aside, it was a dumb business deal. We spend a few trillion for a chance to gain a few billion in perhaps 10 to 20 years. By the time these oil fields are up to speed, the oil era will be phasing out. Is this our energy policy? What do you think of Bob's comment that even if this is what's going on, and it seems to be, that it's bad business, at least for the country as a whole?
Well, that's always been true. But the point is you have revenues that are shifted. You have money that's taken out of the pocket of the ordinary citizen to pay for a war or to pay for some sort of federal thing, and the money gets put back in the pocket of the big companies and enrich people who own it. That's the way income is transferred, and the government is part of that. Now, but if you look specifically at what's been happening in Iraq, let's suppose that they end up spending, they've already spent about $200 billion on this game, and it's certainly not over. Let's suppose they spend $400 billion altogether. Well, my estimates are that the companies are going to make more than a trillion, maybe 2 trillion. So actually, the companies are going to end up getting back more than we paid in. But of course, it's not as if it's money we spent and we make a profit.
It's not the same people.
Back into our pocket. It's entirely a transfer.
The fact
that certain people die and get killed
right,
and all in the process,
right.
Hey, that's just part of the game.
That's just part of what it takes to get profits. Sometimes you have to kill a few people, I guess.
Right.
Let me go to the phones. We've got Gordon from Michigan. Gordon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. I just wonder what the terrorist factor is in all this.
The terrorist factor?
Hasn't the strife in Iraq caused a basic shutdown of the efficient flow of the oil in Iraq?
Yeah, Mr. Paul, I mean, are we getting Iraqi oil right now, or is this only for the future? Has terrorism shut it down?
The companies are planning to sign production sharing agreements that will probably run 30 to 40 years into the future. Now, of course, they're making a certain gamble when they do that, that things will settle down. But the caller is absolutely right. Right now, production is pretty much down, and exports are very low. They're down around 1.8 million barrels a day, and Iraq could be producing and exporting, not right now, but I mean sometime in the near future, 8 or 10 million barrels a day. So they've got a long ways to go to put it all together. Security has to be different and so on.
What's interesting to me is when you put all the pieces together, you can make an argument that the Iraqis that are killing Americans, killing British troops, are actually fighting so that their country can control their own natural resource and not give it to us. It sure doesn't, the president calls these people terrorists, but I don't know. Maybe they're just fighting to get rid of an occupying army. It's a scary thought. Mr. Paul, thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop. We'll be right back. When we come back, I want to talk about the hearings that occurred before Congress where the oil execs were not sworn in, but still lied to Congress. We'll be right back. You can call in at 877-528-TALK right after this.
Do you sell dietary supplements? If so, you may know that the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission regulate your sales presentations. Violation of the federal rules can lead to stiff penalties. You really must know the law. Fortunately, help is just a phone call away. Law Talk Incorporated has produced a CD series, 4-CD interviews with renowned attorney Jonathan W. Emord that explain the legal limits on sales presentations. The CD series guides you through FDA and FTC regulation, explaining the law that governs sales presentations, website content, and health claims, as well as global restrictions on supplement sales. This is a must-buy for network marketers and supplement companies alike. To obtain the CD series, call 1-888-RU-FREE-1. 1-888-RU-FREE-1. That's 1-888-783-7331. Call today.
Johnny Reese is a major league pitcher who has always had a talent for striking people out. Teams fell over themselves trying to recruit the young man with a menacing fastball. But baseball isn't his only talent. You see, he's also a major league hitman, a contract killer who likes his work. Reese can do more than strike you out. He can eliminate you altogether. Jack Kane, a retired New York City detective, has a talent of his own, catching bad guys. When it comes to murder investigations, Jack Kane is a big leaguer, too. For action and suspense, Squeeze Play by Jim Harrington is a grand slam. You can buy a Squeeze Play at all your favorite online booksellers. But for Talkstar Radio listeners, there's a special deal. Buy Squeeze Play now at a special discounted price and receive a signed autographed copy from the author. Buy yours now at yourmorning.com. Buy yours for the holidays today, yourmorning.com.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and we're talking about oil. You see, it may have been about oil after all. Those protesters, those radical left-wing protesters with their signs, no blood for oil. Well, guess what? It has helped the oil companies tremendously. In fact, the only thing that's not helping them is, the Iraqis that are fighting our troops, because we're getting deals signed, right? The companies are getting there to make massive profits. And when oil companies were brought before Congress to discuss these massive profits, again, Exxon earned last quarter, without even the Iraqi oil, as my guest James Paul pointed out, without even this Iraqi oil that's coming down the pike with these lucrative contracts, $10 billion, the largest quarterly earnings of any United States corporation in history. Why did they make so much? Well, back in the 70s, when Jimmy Carter tried to do a windfall profits tax on the oil companies, well, they got so mad they ran him out of office. But why were the oil companies doing so well? Well, to find out that question and to, I guess, try to get voters off their backs, the Senate had a hearing under good old Ted Stevens. Remember Ted Stevens? He's the Alaskan senator who said that he would resign from the Senate if they dared take a bridge in Alaska that costs hundreds of millions of dollars to American taxpayers and instead use it to rebuild the bridges in New Orleans. Well, Ted Stevens decided that he didn't want to swear in the oil execs. Now, I've worked in Congress. I know how it works. Every single person that comes before you is sworn in. You have to tell the truth under penalty of perjury. That's what you do when you testify before Congress. But I also know that the way the rules work is the chairman, and Ted Stevens is chosen by the Republicans who control the Senate, the chairman can waive that rule. Well, two brave Democrats tried to stop her. The first voice you're going to hear is Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington State. She tried to swear in the witness. The second you hear is from Barbara Boxer. Let's listen to their conflict with Ted Stevens over whether to swear in the oil company executives.
Mr. Chairman, I would like the committee to vote on whether we swear.
There will be no vote. It's the decision of the chairman, and I have made that decision.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we swear in the witnesses.
And I rule that out of order.
I second the motion.
Thank you very much. That's the last we're going to hear about that because it's out of order.
Now, why was Ted Stevens, Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, so determined to prevent swearing in the typical procedure of those witnesses? Well, we now know, guess what? That the oil execs lied to Congress right after they weren't sworn in. No wonder they didn't want to be under penalty of perjury. What did they do? They told Congress that they were not connected with Dick Cheney's Energy Commission. You remember the Secret Energy Commission. Dick Cheney still won't tell us who's on it, but it was set up in order to help oil companies make huge profits. And its result, the energy bill, passed by the Republicans in Congress. By the way, it was a close bill, folks. Virtually every Republican had to vote for the bill. Clearly, if the Democrats controlled Congress, it never would have soared through. But this was corporate welfare. In other words, Exxon, having made the largest profit of any American corporation in history, needed more money, needed your money, needed my money, needed taxpayer money. Not just the money that they get at the pump, folks, but also money from your tax dollars. In other words, you know, all those poor people, the welfare queens you hear Republicans complain about, people who want money from the government for food and clothing and horrible things like trying to give their six-year-old basic health care so he doesn't die. You know, all that worthless stuff. Let the guy die. I mean, you know, they're poor, they're worthless anyway. That's what Republicans will tell you when they're trying to cut, as they've tried to cut, Medicaid and basic food stamps and student loans, things like that. No, instead we're doing corporate welfare. We're giving Exxon more money. And this is totally apart from the Iraqi oil. So they were asked by members of Congress, were they connected with Dick Cheney's Energy Council, Energy Commission? And they said no. They said, absolutely not, no connection with it. Well, it's now been reported by the Washington Post, based on Secret Service logs, that they lied to Congress. And guess who didn't correct that lie, right? Didn't say they were lying. Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney knew that these folks weren't telling the truth, but he didn't correct the record. No, it was up to the Washington Post. And now we know why Ted Stevens didn't want the oil companies to have to swear in. Is Gordon from Michigan still there?
I still am, and I'm listening to this, and I'm wondering, is there a cap on greed in this country? Is there a point where it just becomes, the greed becomes so inefficient in itself that it turns, it corrupts whoever it is involved in it? I mean,
I don't think there is, unfortunately. I think what's interesting is that we've got a lot of greedy people all working together. I mean, Saddam Hussein was greedy. He controlled a bunch of oil. He was a dictator. He controlled everything. He tortured his own people. And, you know, he used the massive oil profits. So now we have new people who are in there running the country, still torturing people. That's, unfortunately, our U.S. government doing it. And but we get the oil profits now. I mean, to me, this is almost biblical. You know, the way wars used to be fought, not over ideas, not over people, not over silly things like genocide, but over important things like wealth. In other words, Iraq had something, and we wanted it, and we were more powerful than they are, so we took it. And now we get the oil wealth, and I guess that's just how it works.
Well, even the robber barons, industrial barons of the early 20th century realized there was a point where giving was more efficient. Giving was the efficiency of the system because the system would die without returning that wealth to the system. You know, even Reagan tried to say, well, this trickle-down theory has that same kind of merit to it. But
I don't know that Reagan ever turned his back.
Understand that.
I don't know that Reagan ever turned his back on trickle-down, Gordon, but I'll tell you this. When I look at, for example, the Enron execs, making hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, literally by stealing from California consumers. I mean, actually taking people who couldn't pay their energy bill and so would be, you know, freezing in the winter, and take their money and laughed about it. I mean, you remember when they, during the fires in California that they used to spike up the profits, you had Enron execs saying, burn, baby, burn. The idea was, as long as the people in California were suffering, they could manipulate the prices and they could make huge profits.
Beyond stealing now, they're blatantly killing.
Yep. For some
and,
people, there's
you know, like you said, it's biblical, and maybe I should just go back out on my shelter and wait for the frogs to start raining.
Well, don't do that quite yet, Gordon, because we have to take a break. But for some people, I'm afraid that greed does have no limits. 877-528-TALK. We'll be right back after this.
Sleepless nights, agonizing days. Don't let the stress of heavy credit card debt ruin your life or the ability for you to get a good job. Take action. Call Debt Relief of America. They are professional, proven debt negotiators that work for you to get credit card companies to eliminate 50 to 60% of your credit card debt. Credit card companies make it hard for the average American to get out of debt. High interest rates and late fees keep you in a never-ending cycle of debt prison. Debt Relief of America helps you break free by wiping out up to 60% of your credit card debt using secret programs most credit card companies don't want you to know about.
I was buried in debt with no way of knowing how I was going to get out. DRA worked with my creditors and cut my debt in half.
Call now for your free debt relief consultation. There is absolutely no cost or obligation. Call 800-509-5495. 800-509-5495. One call can literally save you thousands of dollars. Not available in all states. 800-509-5495. 800-509-5495.
When I do it, everything goes dark. My heart pounds. My hands shake. and I feel like a completely different person. The rush is so intense. I think everybody should do it.
Kenzie Olson is under the influence of her community theater volunteer, helping out at an after-school theater program. She helps Kenzie stay off the street and off drugs. So, share a skill, a passion, a hobby with kids in your community, and you can make a big difference. That's because kids who enjoy a regular positive activity with an adult are less likely to begin using drugs or alcohol. Find out how you can be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer. No matter what it is, you have something to offer. Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313 and be an influence on the kids in your community. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. So maybe it was all about oil. You know, I argued 2.5 years ago, and I wasn't the only one, that the main reason to invade Iraq was oil. And really, if you look at it logically, it has to be about oil. If you're looking at threats to the United States, North Korea was developing nuclear weapons. It didn't have them when Bush came to power in that Supreme Court election. It has them now. So they developed it on our watch, and this is a person who has killed actually far more than Saddam Hussein. He has allowed millions of his people to die through forced famines. And one of the things I learned actually in college at Harvard was that famines are not today. They're not at all based on, lack of food. If there's a famine in a country today, it's based solely on the fact that the government wants that famine to happen. So here you have a very dangerous man to the United States and a very dangerous man to his own people. We didn't go after him. Iran, developing nuclear weapons right now, has said, in fact, they want to wipe out the state of Israel. They're definitely unfriendly to the United States. They're developing nuclear weapons. We're doing very little. Iraq, well, they gassed some Kurds with our support 15 years ago. That was awful. Don't get me wrong. That was thousands of people died, and it was done with chemical weapons supplied by our government, France and Russia. But why were we invading? Well, we were invading because they told us about these weapons of mass destruction that we now know not only weren't there, but that the Bush administration manipulated the intelligence to put it there. So if it wasn't about weapons of mass destruction, and it wasn't about threats to the United States, and it wasn't about harm to its own people, it had to be about oil. If Kim Jong-il had oil, he probably wouldn't be in power right now. Gordon, I know you're still on the line. You have a last comment for me.
Well, you know, has this whole experiment been cost-effective? I mean, we're strung out on a situation which the guest admitted we're not getting a good flow of oil coming out of Iraq, and the terrorists can pretty much attack these oil lines at will. Are we in a real good cost-effective situation? My answer is no.
Well, I think that we will fall back on doing what we started originally. You remember, Gordon, when we first invaded, the first thing we sent to protect was the oil fields. It wasn't the parliament. It wasn't the Iraqi museum. It wasn't the stashes of money. It wasn't even weapons of mass destruction. You remember that right before the election, they found that stash of weapons, conventional weapons that could blow up, that was massive, massive tons, could kill hundreds of thousands of people, and they didn't even secure that, even though they knew where it was, the UN told them where it was, they didn't even secure weapons depots. The first thing they secured were oil fields. I suspect that as terrorism gets worse, as Iraq deteriorates, as more Americans get killed, that we will fall back and not try to take the countryside, not try to worry about Fallujah, we'll just try to protect the oil fields.
Yes, but the ammo that explosive that we didn't protect will probably be used against those same oil lines that we'll try to defend.
Well, it'd be interesting to see who the Iraqi insurgents go after. If they go after American lives, the oil companies will probably say, so it's a few more American boys and girls dead, let's keep fighting for the oil. If they actually go after the oil, if they actually blow up the oil fields, maybe just then that'll change our mind and get us to get out. I hate to give them advice, but it seems to me that, for one, it would kill less Americans, and two, it would get us out of there. And frankly, since it is all about oil, that's one way to actually convince us to leave.
I think that's the realization that they'll have to come to, that it's just not cost-effective in the short run and the long run.
I'm afraid that's the case. Gordon, thank you very much for calling in. Tomorrow I'm going to a meeting of progressives in Washington, D.C., progressive radio hosts. I will not have a show then, but tune in Sunday for the weekly review from 5 to 7 p.m. And then that great show that I've been preparing for, some of you have seen it on the blog, Darth Cheney. We're moving that to next Tuesday. In the meantime, tomorrow I want you to listen again to a replay of my really fascinating, important inside scoop last Thursday about the torture camps put up by Bush Ambassador Mel Sembler that claimed to be drug rehab centers, but where so many Americans were abused. Tune in tomorrow for that, right here on the Inside Scoop.
It attacks the brain, and you might not know what hit you.
And it can cripple or kill you.
If suddenly you're numb or weak on one side, limb, or face,
it could be a stroke. Get help. There's no time to waste.
It could even be a sudden severe headache without cause.
If you wait to get help, time lost is brain lost.
Maybe it's a loved one slurring their speech or dizzy.
Call 911 and get medical help quickly.
There are even more symptoms that I did not mention.
So call or hit the web for information and prevention.
Blacks have a higher occurrence. Do you want to know more?
Call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org.
High blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity
all make the risk of a stroke more likely.
But remember, if it happens, do not delay.
Or disability might be the price you pay.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.